this sort of thing. Well, it's good to have you back. It's been a couple of years. I'm trying to remember. I've read a number of your books. I think it was God Player that you were, or maybe Fever.
Hmm.
But it's been a couple of years, so it's nice to have you back. And Outbreak was a wonderful thriller. I think I read it in 1.5 sittings.
Well, that's like, the way it's designed to be.
Yeah, that's the kind of book that it's so thrilling you can't put it down. And the nice thing about it, I get a little tired sometimes of reading mysteries and thrillers, and they often have political themes. Or there's always a group of Russians somewhere in the background, or a group of Nazis plotting, or federal agents who are unethical. But this is an entirely different theme. I think you've really gotten onto something here. Certainly paid off for you and the readers. I know that you have a coterie of readers that just love your stuff. Tell me what led you to select this particular subject, because it's not, of course, when you're dealing with this outbreak, this very unusual, obscure disease that came from Africa, it's not exactly like AIDS, and yet there are some similarities. So tell me a little bit about how the idea for this story developed.
The way my stories originate is that I have some aspect of the medical environment that interests me or that I think the public should know about. And then there is a kind of mystical way that idea gets transformed into the form of a story, something that I think people would be interested in and have some fun reading. The subject here was that I could see that we were developing a circumstance in American medicine that some people refer to as the American Medical Revolution. There was a recent cover story in Newsweek, and it was titled the same thing. Joseph Califano put a book out, The American Medical Revolution. And within that context, there is this problem, what I call an American medical civil war. And that was the thing that interested me the most, because I could see this coming, particularly in my specialty of ophthalmology, where I think that the problem of too many ophthalmologists has been more apparent, because we have a group of people called optometrists who feel quite strongly that they should be allowed to do more than they are. So in other words, the competitive environment has grown significant over the last few years. And what pressures that causes inside the medical profession, economic pressures, combined with a lot of the other problems, economic problems associated with American health, has produced a situation where doctors are actually fighting with each other, essentially over patients, which is really a strange circumstance and has implications, I think, to patients. And that was the issue that interested me the most. And how do I design a story to make this interesting? Well, of course, there are always other pieces and things that interest me. First of all, the AIDS problem, it's been around a lot, and I did refer to AIDS problem several books ago when it was new. It's no longer new. But what's new is the fact that virus, the idea of a virus, what is a virus? People have become aware of this AIDS problem, but I think that they're interested in what viruses are, and I thought, well, now here's an opportunity. Can I combine the two? And somehow out of this mix, somehow I come up with these stories. And in fact, I have encouraged a lot of doctors to start writing. And
the doctors who speak to you.
Right. And they all call me up and they say, gee, I've decided that I want to write a bestseller like you did. Can you give me a few hints? I think they think it's somehow easier than it is. Although when I began, I thought that, well, gee, if I can do it, they can do it too. And I think that the mystical portion of doing this is somehow being able to translate some of these ideas and circumstances into a real story, something that hangs together, makes sense, it's fun to read, it's entertaining. And in this, in Outbreak, to dramatize the Civil War circumstance, as I call it, that's going on in the medical profession, where one group of doctors is essentially doing kind of nasty things to another, like trying to deny them privileges at a specific hospital or something of that sort, or being upset that there are so many foreign medical graduates, or being irritated that there's a prepaid health plan that's somehow taking patients away from them, and what can they do to get back at them? And suddenly I had this idea of that what if there was a sort of a medical mafia that started, that decided that it was going to take things in its own hand and had the idea that the ultimate goal was the betterment of American medicine and therefore could justify its means. And it wasn't something that just completely came out of my imagination, because in my research I found out that there was such a group back in the 40s when Truman tried to get national health insurance enacted in this country. There was a group of very strong right-wing physicians that formed a kind of a secret group to sort of sabotage that effort. And part of the sabotaging was to label any kind of organization like that as communistic or socialized, and that pejorative term has stayed until today. But anyway, it was out of this mix of ideas and whatnot that I was able to come up with the storyline of Outbreak.
Of course, you realize you've given the plot away by letting people know who the villains are in this book.
In a way, but I was worried about that in my first book, Coma, when I thought, now how can you talk about a novel and get people interested in it and yet keep them from sort of not knowing what the mystery is? Well, it turned out that it didn't seem to make any difference. The way people will enjoy the book doesn't really make any difference. In fact, in a recent New York Times review of Outbreak, the reviewer said that the main character didn't seem to know as much as I did when I was reading it, and that was curious. And he said that maybe that was part of the reason that he had so much fun reading it, because he made him feel like he was superior to this professional.
Well, of course, that's not completely fair, because you did have a couple of scenes in which you cut away from the main character. Most of the scenes, of course, follow the character's development, but there are two scenes, I believe, at least two, maybe three or four toward the end in San Francisco, where the killers were seeking this young woman, where you did cut away from her. So you did give the reader more information than you gave the heroine.
That's very aptly put. And in fact, the reviewer did not refer to that, and that is indeed the case. And that's the difference between a mystery and a thriller. And Outbreak is definitely a thriller. And the characteristic, at least as I understand it, of a thriller that makes it different from a mystery is that you as the reader, through the vehicle of the third person, are in a position to learn certain things that the main character doesn't know. And therefore, you can, that the main character ends up walking blindly into a circumstance that you know is not a really healthy place for that person to be. And so you're just flipping the pages trying to find out exactly what's going to happen, because you're anticipating this.
Sure, the reader can say, don't do it. Don't act like that. It's going
to go up into that house. You know what's in the basement.
Don't open that door. Well, now, have you received any irate letters from doctors who say, hey, look what you're doing to the medical profession? It's kind of hard to do, since you are certainly an establishment member of the medical profession, or at least were, but have you had any irate comments from fellow doctors?
Not yet, not about this book. But joking aside, that I do get a lot of communication from other physicians, not only physicians that I know personally, but I get a lot of mail from other physicians. And it says something, because although there might be a few letters that suggest something like what you're talking about, Coma, for instance, a couple of doctors wrote to me that they thought that I was providing a disservice by scaring people away from surgery. And I wrote back to them is that I'm scared of surgery, so why shouldn't people have that same feeling? I think it's a fairly healthy attitude. Most of the doctors that read my stories are much more intimately aware of the problems that I'm talking about than the general public.
Have they ever caught you on errors or inaccuracies?
I try to be very careful about that. And the research that I do a lot of research for each one of these books. And in fact, in Outbreak, I went down to the Centers for Disease Control. And I had never visited there before. And I spent some time talking with a woman epidemiologist who had trained as a pediatrician and was now working at the CDC. And she hadn't been there that long, gone through the introductory course, and she'd been out on a couple of these field assignments, epidemic aid requests, as they call them, and talked with her at length about why she was there, what it was like, and that sort of stuff. So that's actually very, very accurate and factual. And also in terms of how they deal with viruses, how they set up the quarantines. And
well, it's obvious that you have done your research, and it shows in little things. For example, where Melissa, is that her? I can't remember the
heroine.
Marissa goes to Washington to seek out the Texas congressman who is, in effect, the funnel or aiding these doctors. And you describe a scene when she's going up in a congressional office building in an elevator, and it's filled with graffiti.
So I was there.
Yeah, and it shows that that you had to be there to do that.
I think those small aspects of a book of this sort are very important. I want people to really believe that they are reading something that's very possible. I think that's part of the immediacy of the book. And I'm aware that if I read a book in which there is some glowing inaccuracies, then it casts a shadow on the whole premise. And so I am very careful about even those small things, what it's like to go to the elections commission, and how do you get that information. I knew that information was available, but I didn't know how you got it or in what form it was. So indeed, I went to Washington, and I went trooping over there, and I did that.
Well, now this virus that you write about, is there such a virus? Or
absolutely.
Was there? Now, tell me about that.
It's called Ebola. And it's named after a river in Zaire. Now, I didn't go to Zaire, but I spoke to people that had. In fact, several of the doctors at the CDC had gone to Zaire because this virus appeared for the first time in 1976. And apparently, it is the most deadly virus known to man so far. And it appeared at that hospital, the Yambuku Mission Hospital, a Belgian Catholic mission hospital. And that the prologue of Outbreak is actually a slightly fictionalized account of that first outbreak. When it appeared, somebody stumbled in, didn't feel well, and they thought he had malaria. They treated him. He came back. They institutionalized him. And lo and behold, it wiped out the hospital in terms of patients, nurses, doctors, and most of the small town. And they quarantined this area. They sent in some people. One of the persons that was sent in was someone I interviewed, tried to find out what did it feel like to get essentially dropped into an area where people were dying like flies, and just the idea of that, it evoked a certain horror in me and yet a fascination at the same time, because this is nature. And but anyway, it is a real virus. They had never been seen before this time of 1976. It's had incidents several times since then. They have all so far been in that area of Africa, which includes Zaire and the Sudan. And but at the same time, there are samples of that virus that exist in this country.
Is there a sample at the Center for Disease? Is that the right?
Yes.
Center for Disease
Centers
Control?
Centers for Disease Control.
And is there a sample of that virus there, protected
yes.
only by a bicycle lock?
Well, that was one of the things that did disturb me a little bit, because just as my main character was a little disappointed and surprised that the storage facility for these exotic viruses, Ebola and all the others, she expected it to be somehow more high-tech, somehow more secure. And indeed, what I was shown was a standard freezer that was adapted to take liquid nitrogen coolant to make it even colder, and was indeed locked with a link chain and a bicycle lock. And although I had a very, very good feeling about the Centers for Disease Control in the sense of it, of the one federal agency that I've ever been in that really seemed to give the public a lot of service for its dollar, and that the people were really committed. They were not like the usual bureaucrats that I saw, particularly when I was in the military, even in medicine in the military, come 4:30, it's quitting time, goodbye. These people at the CDC are so committed to what they're doing that they stay there hours and hours into the night and whatnot. But the one thing that did bother me was in the sense that I just wondered if these deadly organisms were being given the kind of respect that I think that they deserve.
Could they indeed be stolen and spread in the way that you describe an outbreak?
Well, I was in there to look at it, and as my main character, Marissa, says to the director, I was in there, and he, of course, had, his point is that who's going to go in there, the cleaning lady? I mean, he was being a little facetious about it.
Do they actually wear these suits?
Yes, they do wear these suits, and it is set up the way. It's not quite as, in fact, I gave it more protection than it actually has. That there is no card system that locks this whole area away. I added that. And they do wear these suits, and there is a negative pressure so that air flows only in and then is sent through a system to make sure that had there been, if there is any airborne contamination, that the viruses will be killed.
Well, tell me, well, this is a wonderful book, and your readers are going to like this, I'm sure. Tell me about what you've been doing. I know, obviously, you spend a lot of time writing, but you've been going back and forth from New York. You live here in New York as well as Boston, don't you?
I'd had an apartment here in New York for some time, but I mostly stay in Boston, although I also have a place down in Florida, too.
Mm-hmm.
But Boston is kind of my center, particularly for anything associated with research and writing, because I'm still on the staff of the hospital there.
Are you still practicing medicine?
I'm not practicing medicine in a formal sense, because I did give up. I had a small private practice at one point, but I gave that up a few years ago. But I'm still on the staff, still have some obligations as to be on the staff.
What does that mean? What obligations do you have?
Well, the obligations to be on the staff, you have teaching obligations in the clinic and with the medical students and residents that rotate through the hospital. And
that would be good for you, it would seem to me. It would give you this interaction that you would need to develop, to meet additional people and develop story ideas.
That's very true. And in fact, some other people that I know who have had medical education then got into entertainment field have really left medicine behind. And it's amazing how quickly medicine then leaves them behind. The pace of change is so rapid that unless you stay somehow involved, that you're not going to be up on what is the current sort of problems. And today, with the pace of change today, the problems that exist today were not even thought of when I was in medical school, and which was not that long ago.
You still read all the medical journals?
Yes. In fact, I'm much better off in that regard than when I had my private practice, because when I had my private practice, it was ophthalmology. And so there's plenty of ophthalmic medical journals to keep one occupied. And then you begin to be less concerned about medicine in general when you get into caught in the clutches of a specialty. Now I find that I can be somewhat more selective about what I read in ophthalmology and much more inclusive in terms of reading the journals, going through the journals that deal with medicine in general. And there is one textbook now that I find extremely valuable for me is a textbook that comes out every month. And it's Scientific American that decided a number of years ago to write a textbook of medicine. And it's in a loose leaf format. And every month you get an update. And it's not the same as a journal. And yet, in certain sense, it functions like a journal, only it's a little bit better. Because what it is a crystallization of a lot of the material that's been coming out in journals, and yet now is definitely has been collated well enough to become part and parcel of a medical textbook. And that's something that I've enjoyed very much, and that what I do is I go through that monthly supplement each month, and that's like reading a book in itself.
In addition to the technical aspect, you have to constantly search for social aspects of medicine, too, to combine, don't
you? Absolutely. And there has been quite a an explosion of this kind of material available. And if you go to any one of the large current bookstores, there's usually a large section on health. And it used to be that the section on health were mostly diet books or exercise books or that. But you suddenly, within the last few years, you suddenly see a large number of books that are dealing with social issues about medicine. And I go through very frequently and pull out a bunch of these and go through them myself. It's indicative of the fact that these issues are something that have become more important. And yet, at the same time, these books have very limited distribution. And the reason is that people in general are not apt to go into a bookstore, go to that health section, and pull out a book, let's say, on the economics of medicine and its immediate effect on the delivery of health care. However, that's what Outbreak is about. It makes people think about that because we're in the throes of having the way medicine in this country is being changed, the way it's being delivered.
Surrogate mothering, would that be something that would fit into your area of interest?
Yes, particularly the issue of the current trial that's going on in Hackensack, where you can see both points of view. And a lot of medical issues are like that, in the sense that they don't lend themselves to quick and easy solutions.
And it is indeed a medical issue as well, because artificial insemination was something that probably would have been difficult a number of years ago. Is that true?
That's correct. I mean, again, as I said earlier, is that a lot of the questions that we're stumbling over now didn't exist when I went to medical school. Things were a lot clearer, much more black and white than the fact that even the question of when someone was alive and when they were dead was much clearer when I was in medical school than it is today. And the fact that now people who are dead have a certain value to people who are living, that wasn't, immediately dead, new dead, or half dead, or wherever you want to draw the line, in terms of organs for transplantation, that sort of thing, the issue that I dealt with in coma.
Well, tell me a little bit about you. How do you fire your day when you're not teaching or whatever you do as on the staff over there? What is an ordinary day like for Robin Cook?
Well, it depends upon what stage of a project I'm in. This book that has just come out requires me to do what I'm doing now, and that is to get out and try to get more people interested in taking a peek at it. But I'm also in the middle of the outline for my next book, and which requires, as we discussed, a lot more research than people would probably imagine. They think, oh, he's a doctor, so he obviously knows this material. But in each individual arena, I have to do a lot of research. The main character of my next book is going to be a pathologist. I have no idea what a pathologist does all day long. And I know what a pathology resident does, because when I was a surgical resident, I indeed had to rotate through pathology and, in a sense, do what a pathology resident does. But I don't know what a practicing, large, academic medical center pathologist does during his whole day. And just before I came last week, I contacted a pathologist in my hospital and have arranged that I'm going to spend a week with him, which means that I will be sort of over his shoulder for a week. And it's that kind of activity which, although I know what my main character is going to do in the sense of the new book, there are all sorts of aspects of the plotting that will become more apparent when I have a better idea of what his actual function is on a day-to-day sort of basis. I've also been very interested in medical education, and during this whole fall, I've gone back to medical school. What I mean by that is I've been going back to medical school classes, a number of them, but instead of listening to the lecturer per se, I have been watching and listening to the medical students. And medical education, like the rest of medicine, is in throes of great pressure for change. And So I have been interested in perhaps utilizing that aspect in a future project. So it's my normal day is one that's taken up usually by some sort of investigation into the current circumstance of medicine.
What do you do to relax?
I am, I guess, athletics are my main method of relaxation. And
what do you do?
Well, I play basketball every day.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you have a regular team, or you work out, or what?
Well, it's I play at the medical school.
Mm-hmm.
So every afternoon, from between about 5 and 7, we have a group of people that come in, and we play every day. And I look forward to ski trips, and usually, in fact, one of my favorite ski trips is the Aspen Retinal Detachment Society ski trip, which is a medical meeting, actually a good medical meeting, but we ski until 3 when the lifts close, and then we have a meeting from about 3:30 until 7. And it happens to be one of the best ophthalmological meetings that I attend.
Well, I wouldn't mind eyeballing that one myself. Well, can we expect that the hero of your next book will indeed be a heroine?
Well,
seems to be normal for Robin Cook to have female heroes.
Well, it's been about 50-50, and which I think is fun, and I enjoy it. It's a little more difficult for me to write from the point of view of a female, but it provides other benefits, particularly in a thriller, because traditionally women are considered a little bit more vulnerable. I'm not so sure that's correct, but that's part of the mythology, and in a certain sense, part of a thriller is making your main character vulnerable in a certain way. At least that's the kind of thrillers that I have the most fun with. You get some and you lose some, depending upon whether you select a man or a woman. But it is interesting that I've done it both ways, and it seemed to have worked with my name, Robin Cook, it is definitely a man's name traditionally from England. However, in this country, most of the Robins that I meet are women. And I feel it's a great compliment when I get a lot of mail from the paperback books that I write, which do not have a picture on the back, directing it to myself as a woman. Which I think, well, gee, I must have done a fairly good job then.
Well, as a matter of fact, somebody remarked to me when they asked who was coming in today, I said, Robin Cook. And he said, oh, yeah, I remember him. He wrote that book about the Green Berets. Robin Cook, it's a wonderful thriller. Your readers will like it. I thank you very much for paying this house call on me. Thank you again.
Thank you.